So the recording will be available on the meeting page and also possibly on YouTube or something. So that's all for now. I don't see Richard on the call anymore. Maybe he got kicked out. Anyway, so I'm going to ask Richard, who is the who I've had a pleasure of working with on the early days of R3 in the architecture working group, and started this organization called Lab 577. And Richard can explain everything about how what their products are and how it's going to disrupt the financial markets infrastructure. Thanks, Richard, for showing up. And I think Richard is going to do his thing.
Can you hear me, Vipin?
Yeah, I can hear you and I can see your screen.
Excellent. Well, I'm getting there then. Let's start the ball rolling. We don't have many participants on the call, so what I would ask you to do is, if you've got questions, do feel free to throw them out. I might not answer them immediately. I might park them and come back to them. But what I'm interested to do is walk through the slides relatively rapidly and then turn it over to Q&A. We've got a full hour, but if the questions dry up, we can definitely hand this over and close it down. I normally don't hear the code of conduct being read so well. Normally it's the antitrust law being lectured to us. So it's really nice to hear the code of conduct once in a while. So Richard Crook, I run Lab 577. I'll go into a bit more detail of my background and, as part of the slides. But what I wanted to do today was, just as the description on the talk spoke of, we'll give you a description of the platform, which brings together some of the pieces we've been working on, and hopefully give you a more holistic view of the solution, where we've got now a number of projects, a number of brands out there. All of them are interlocked, and therefore we wanted to give this as an opportunity to members recognize what we're doing, and maybe see where that takes us as a journey. Okay, just working through these slides. Let's start with the start. So, Richard Crook, I stepped out of Royal Bank of Scotland, took my team with me. We were running the emerging tech team over there back end of 2018. And in doing so, we stood up a company called Lab 577, which sits in the nexus between financial services and emerging technology. Emerging technology for us are AI, quantum, blockchain, where predominantly a large chunk of our time right now is being spent on blockchain, a distributed ledger, if you will. And that comes from a lot of work we did in the early days. My team and I broke cover when we backed Ripple into the FX wholesale trading desk of RBS. We built a distributed ledger for the five Irish banks, and that allowed us to recognize things like the privacy requirement and realize we needed a finance into micro, which we're going to take it to Series A. We let them grow quarter until about version 3, I think it was, back in 2017, when many people were watching the Bitcoin price go through the roof, and we were watching a financial bubble. My team and I recognized the killer feature of accounts and tokens, and we could see that the need here was a best of breed of bringing accounts and tokens out of Ethereum and getting that functionality into quarter, which will give us both privacy and the accounts and token functionality. So we did that. back in the 2017, wrote cover with it. In 2018, we released it, mostly from the legal perspective, to rid RBS of its liabilities into open source. There was no desire to make money out of that. What we were doing was attempting to accelerate the Corda community. And that's really what Cordite as an open source project has been doing. It's been driving new disruptive, controversial features into the Corda space. And also, we have always had an eye on the convergence of both crypto and what we would describe as enterprise blockchain, where we knew that the mainstream financial space would come together with crypto, and we wanted to be part of that journey. So Cordite, from that perspective, is an open source project. More than welcome to dive into the code. There's a fair amount of code right now. Pretty much anybody in the Corda space finds themselves using a bit of Cordite. Usually the network map service is the first place they find themselves using Cordite. Others have started to use the tokens, the accounts. One of the pieces that was long forgotten was the first digital mutual, or the mutual society, where we went to the FCA, sat in their sandbox, and created a cooperative, a UK cooperative, that we call the mutual, a digital mutual. That has been gaining dust over the last couple of years. It was too early. We couldn't get the type of traction we wanted with it. People were still very much in the mindset of tokens at the time. But we recognized that one of the great use cases of distributed ledger was in the concept of decentralized finance. The idea that you could bring a small group together, a syndicate. And I use the word syndicate because you see syndicates in the insurance space with Lloyds. You see syndicates in the lending space under syndicated loans. We recognize the strength of using blockchain as a way of pulling together parties to act as one under a legal structure. Earlier this year, my team and I had a opportunity to focus once more on this area. And what we did was work to create a new digital currency. This is the first digital currency on the Corda public network. So for those of you not aware, there is a public Corda network. Anyone can join that. You have to pass the sort of basic AML CTF. It's run by a non-profit out in Holland, or Amsterdam. And that public Corda network is available for anybody running a Corda node or running a Corda app. Any consortiums, business network operators are now starting to come together. It, from my perspective, looks... an internet and the Corda space, big silos of small networks. And now the conversation around interoperability rages as we try and bring these parties together. So what we did was for XDC, the digital currency, is actually take that digital mutual off the shelf. We built some more functionality into it that would allow it to run and govern a digital currency. From our perspective, in Lab 577, we were simply a consultancy assisting the Cordite Society Limited. Cordite Society Limited is a legal entity in its own right. It's actually registered with the FCA, not in the terms of providing regulatory services, but actually that's where the register of UK cooperatives exists. And under that regulatory body, we find that the cooperative has to operate within a set of rules. So there is actually mutual and therefore digital currency. Is an exchange token. I'll go on to that in a little bit more in a second. But the purpose of this was to, first of all, release that first exchange token onto the public Corda network, provide a supply of a token that could be used as a digital currency within the public Corda network. and allow others to come and join that cooperative society, driving the adoption of that public corner network, and allow others to follow our footsteps, create their own digital currencies as the projects that are within that public corner network start to wonder how to actually make payments and deliver payments over the network, rather than the pattern they're currently doing, which is make the payments outside the network and connect in outside into existing ledgers. So that's a quick walkthrough of Cordite and XDC. I'll just pause there before we step forward. Were there any questions around that? I know we could get stuck on this for the rest of the hour, but I'll open it to the floor just then.
Anyone else questions? Please ask. Otherwise, I have some, but I'll wait for you guys to come up with questions. I see that you are here, Craig. You probably have questions.
No questions.
Okay.
Good. Okay, so obviously the websites, sorry, Vipin, you've got one.
No, it looks like money is...
I have a quick question. This is Manny Pillai from SwapSub. How is your digital mutuals different from Corda's business network and membership, which they are promoting as a way to create business networks?
Not dissimilar. And I'm really pleased you've made that connection. So what we recognized when we brought the five Irish banks together to build a distributed clearinghouse was because they knew each other, and they knew each other quite well. They trusted each other, and immediately they could create a legal entity that could run a centralized clearinghouse. And at that point, the conversation around should we use distributed ledger became a little less useful. And we could actually just run the clearinghouse with a database like we've done before. And that led us to a conversation that said, well, there's little point using a distributed ledger for a centralized business model. So actually those business network operators that are standing up consortiums on the public corner network, many of them are highly centralized at this time. And they're looking for ways to operate that business network very much for the members and between the members. And therefore, what we put on the table was a pattern, if you wish to use that term, a pattern of a legal structure that you could use and actually operate that legal structure on Corda itself. So there's obviously a level of recursion or dog fooding there, which was important. So I'm really pleased you picked up on that. From our perspective, the Digital Mutual is an exemplar of how we think you should run a business network on the public core network or any other consortium or business network operation. Doesn't really matter about the technology underneath. And that's really what we were showing in the creation of that Digital Mutual back in 2018.
Is it dissimilar to the ones that they have brought up for trade finance and other areas? And in case you didn't know, Money is created, he's worked for a long time on Corda, and he has a trading platform that not only looks at the payment side, like the XDC token, but also tries to connect it to the front to back asset trading. So this becomes a payment leg, something like this becomes a payment leg for the asset exchange.
That is a
ambitious goal.
We definitely will want to catch up later on, Richard. I also be in touch with Miles, so we can talk about it later on.
No, absolutely, man. And you're absolutely ahead of us in many ways with the platform you've got and the way you're operating it. I think what we all recognize when we look at financial market infrastructure, and if you just cast yourself for the last 25 years, the banks have been focused on their own internal systems and getting to efficiency or single sources of truth inside those banks. For the next 20 years, we have to bring banks together and improve the interconnects between those banks. And many of those interconnects are historic, built in the financial market infrastructure, as we tend to call it. And that financial market infrastructure has become bloated and high margin over time because the banks weren't that concerned with the cost base. Now that the banks are concerned with the cost base, they're driving and pushing hard on that market infrastructure. And that's why you're seeing a tremendous amount of disruption and investment back into the financial market infrastructure. So I think what we're showing here is different methods and different mechanisms that can be stood up. We're very well aware, having been on the inside, as many of you have, that the banks come together, they create a piece of financial market infrastructure, and then within a number of years, it becomes monopolistic or gains pricing power, and they've created themselves a problem or an issue or challenge that they have to then deal with at a different point or a different life cycle. That is one end of the spectrum, and some of the organizations that that have grown up, the Bloombergs, the Reuters, a lot of the stock exchanges, are well funded because they have that pricing power. Other end of the spectrum, many of you are well aware of pockets of the financial infrastructure that is very underfunded because it is run as a non-profit and it is unable to sustain itself, and no one loves it. The reason no one loves it is because it's underinvested in. And this challenge in the financial market infrastructure of how do we fund pieces continues to rage. If we look actually at the public corridor network, that's a conversation that has been going on now for 2 or 3 years, where the public corridor network could become a business line of R3. But actually, the members have worked extremely hard, and the ecosystem has worked extremely hard to persuade R3 not to try and own the public corridor network, but because by doing so, they will undermine it and they will turn it into yet another monopolistic financial market infrastructure. So that's why you're seeing the public corridor network actually being run by a non-profit away from R3. And actually, R3 is in the business of selling corridor enterprise. And that separation is really important for us to be successful with the vision of what we are expecting in the disruption that blockchain brings to financial market infrastructure. Did that, Manny, we can catch up later on and how you could use XCC. Obviously, welcome you into the Mutual Society. Not suggesting this is how you should run the platform you're building. Just it is a pattern that we have shown and are making obvious.
Yeah, definitely we'll catch up later on it's very interesting. I've been following Cordite for a while, so.
Okay, now, is there anyone else who has questions? Otherwise, I'll ask a couple more. Anyone else? Okay. So, one thing you said was that this is purely for efficiency gains. Do you see other emerging use cases or emerging sort of products that would justify investment in these areas rather than just looking for efficiencies?
Absolutely. So many of us came into this space not because of the efficiency gain. We came into it because we had an interest in the creation of a digital currency, Bitcoin, and the innovation that created. We then moved and spent a lot of time in what we would describe as the enterprise blockchain space, which is an efficiency play. As I described, it is the removal of the friction between or interbank rather than intrabank. And I will go on to further slides to answer. I think the conversation around efficiency gains is well matured now, and actually, we're now back to a conversation about top line and revenue. And I think that's what takes us into tokenization. So it's a really lovely question. Probably takes me into my next slide. If there aren't any more questions on Cordite, happy to get into that, that top line opportunities and revenue opportunities that we're seeing in the capital market space.
I think you should get on to that, although I do have questions about Cordite, which I'll ask later.
I'm always happy to answer questions on Cordite. Cordite for us is a place for us to drop out disruptive and controversial features. Others are doing the same in the Cordite space, and we always welcome others who are keen to try things out in an open source fashion, where in actual fact, they may not want to do it under their own commercial brands. And from our perspective, this continues to provide alternative business models to R3 and accelerate adoption for Corda into different verticals. So that's what Cordite is, it's what it offers. From our perspective, it's now very much operating independently of R3 and Lab 577 and in case NatWest and RBS. Let me move on. Sorry, there was a question.
No, go ahead.
So I think this will be unbelievably preaching to the choir. So just bear with me, because hopefully what it does is just allow us all to resonate on the same page. You will have noticed that I've not mentioned central bank digital currencies until now. You'll also notice that Lab 577 isn't involved in central bank digital currencies. Just a quick history. The Bank of England first went out with its design paper for the UK RTGS in 1989. They went live with it in 1999. They then broke cover with their second generation design paper in 2019. So it doesn't take much of a mathematician to work out that we're probably on track for a second generation UK RTGS in 2029. So with that kind of multi-decade play, I'm not that keen on getting involved in central bank digital currencies. It is a multi-decade play. You need to have very deep pockets. Definitely need to be a salaried employee to get involved in that type of affair. What is interesting, and the reason I put this graph on the table, is I'm not using in this diagram, and it is borrowed from Todd actually over in the Corda space. I think it was one of his blogs, so I'll give him credit. What's interesting is if you look at a central bank digital currency, it is a depository receipt. Trust the custodian. It is up on the left-hand side. But actually, it is a trust the custodian for the banks, the commercial banks that use the central bank as a depository receipt of their land receipts or their other values, stores of value. They then gain from the Bank of England a depository receipt for the Bank of England's the Bank of England's deposits. For you and I, actually, that then becomes, or those tokens become, a payment token. I carry tokens around in my pocket, and we use those around. So interestingly, the two things I would bring to your attention on this diagram is, first of all, different custodians are acting on different timelines. So a commercial bank is very quick and very able to create depository receipts, could do it tomorrow morning, and does it, in fact, all of the time, while the central banks are going to take a multiple decade to get into this situation. But when they do that, their token will actually, for the majority of us, not be seen as a depository receipt, but actually be seen as a payment token. And we will use it between each other as a payment token. So it's fascinating to look at this graph from the other dimensions. Specifically, different actors are running at different timelines, and different actors will see different tokens in different ways. So hopefully what I just did there was open up some thinking for the audience. I recognize that I'm preaching to the choir. Most of you have been over this token type stuff for many years.
Yeah.
So there's a reason I wanted to go into that. If there's no kind of questions, or as long as I've made sense and the crowd is resonating, I will push forward onto the purpose of actually bringing that graph out. The reason for that is because you're all well aware that we're seeing what we would call a disruption in the capital market space. And one of the reasons we stepped out of RBS was because we could see a disruption to the capital markets business. the creation of new digital currencies for the purposes of payments, be it Ripple or Bitcoin Cash or Stellar, wasn't that interesting to us. The creation of capital, the ICO bubble, was interesting. And that showed some clear benefits. Not that I need to go into those. You'll have seen those. Many of you are making business cases for tokenization. We're also now starting to see some really good analysis that shows how quickly we think tokenization will take traction and to what scale. But I think push through that and you will now start to see what's going on over in the crypto space. I will take you towards Uniswap and others, where the idea that we can have automated liquidity provision, or more importantly, the atomic and riskless DVP. So one of the questions Vipin put to me on the talk and the context was around payment legs and the snarly problem of settlement and payments. And actually, one of the reasons that we came into this space, many of us joined this space, is because payments are done discreetly through a totally different fabric or rail than the actual goods and services that they're being paid for. So it doesn't matter if you're settling in the capital markets business for trades coming in on one side, or whether you're in the real economy buying and selling goods, wine, cocoa, doesn't matter. The fact is your payments will be separate legs, even though they are actually two parts or two legs of the same atomic transaction. And the goal or vision that we all have is to be able to make payments on the same fabric or the same rail as the goods and services that are going the other way. And that, to my mind, is really what you're now starting to see in the crypto space. And that will start to appear over on the mainstream finance side relatively quickly over in 2021, is the idea of atomic or riskless DVP and the idea of automated liquidity provision. You don't lock up $3 billion worth of liquidity in Uniswap pools without having solved somebody's problem. And for my mind, anybody that hasn't looked into that space should start looking into that space. It is an extremely exciting part of the crypto puzzle. So that's on the tokenization side. Any questions around that?
There is a whole movement that claims that DeFi will go towards CeFi, and where the twain shall meet, and also where it might get taken over by the CeFi space. Some of these ideas, the ideas behind things like Uniswap or Maker and others.
So for us, and our view on this is relatively straightforward. Finance is already decentralized. You have a large number of banks. One of the best decentralized networks we have is SWIFT, and that's operated exceptionally well over the decades. So it's nothing new around decentralized finance. DeFi as a movement is bringing new thinking and new ideas to this space, but in many ways it's bringing old ideas. And the irony for us, where in the Bitcoin and crypto space, there's been a rapid rise of highly centralized exchanges, the Binance, the BitMEXs, and they have sought to build the same finance market infrastructure, highly centralized finance market infrastructure. They're building that over in the crypto space, while at the same time, over in the financial markets, we've just spent the last half a decade trying to use the same technology to dismantle and disintermediate our centralized financial markets infrastructure. So the irony that the technology is being centralized over in the decentralized space and is being decentralized in the centralized space. You've seen Hong Kong, Singapore, and Switzerland now starting to adjust their regulation as they recognize that they may have over-centralized their regulation and forced the creation of centralized financial market infrastructure and thus provided monopolistic or key risks, single key risks in their infrastructures. What we have always pointed out is that these two sides, mainstream finance and crypto, are converging. You can see crypto, Kraken taking a banking license. You've just seen PayPal start listing crypto. We always use the last line of the Animal Farm book. The creatures looked from man to pig and pig to man, and they could not see the difference. It is only a matter of time between these two start converging, and you will not notice the difference between the two. The reason that we pick Uniswap is a really interesting way of discovering price. It is certainly novel, and we haven't seen that price discovery action in the mainstream financial market space for a while, and that is why it's interesting. It's also flawed because, of course, anyone can go into Uniswap, and with that type of AML, CTF, or lack of AML and CFT, you're not going to see in that space the creation of large-scale financial institutions engaging. What Uniswap has done is created a starting gun for the creation of financial-grade Uniswaps, I would suggest. So pushing forward into, I'll just push forward into the slides. I think give everyone a just pushing forward into the market trend that we've been focusing on over in Lab 577. And this is where digital asset shared ledger comes to part of the solution. We obviously have learned a lot from Cordite, and we build on top of Cordite. We've watched and learned from many of the projects we've been involved in the Corda space and other technologies. And actually, in the digital asset shared ledger space, we're very interested in the high potential of private institutional markets, where the public markets, both retail and institutional, are well served after considerable investment over the past decades. It's quite considerable investment. And for those trying to recreate or re-platform those public retail institutional markets, that is not a high potential space for the market. Where we do see high potential is in the private securities, the unlisted, where we do see a liquid and therefore lack of price discovery. You can't see the deal flow. Where in actual fact the cost of an IPO to become a public security is a barrier to entry, especially after the tsunami of regulation. Add that to the fact that the black magic of securitization, which used to have $500,000 price tag to it, is now costing $50,000 to create an SPV and operate it. And that quantum reduction in the cost of securitization means we've gone from a very small number of issuers in a place like Switzerland to hundreds in Switzerland. So before, there only used to be Credit Suisse, UBS would do your securitizations. Now there are hundreds of issuers of securities in Switzerland who are able to create private securities in a matter of days. With ISINs, they all look identical to a security issued out by one of the big crowd. There is always a push towards the retail, and that what that actually means is a reduction in the ticket size. So one of the reasons that blockchain technology or distributed ledger is useful in this space, and the reason that ticket sizes are kept large, is because you only want to deal with a small number of investors. As you reduce the ticket size, you obviously dramatically increase the number of investors. And to do that, you need to have a technology which allows you to track the asset register, and more importantly, be able to pay out the coupons, the dividends as you go through. We're obviously pushing here at a vision, but the firms are plagued by having discrete data silos. Most private securities live and die within the bounds of the institution that issued it, the Credit Suisse, the UBS, JP Morgan's. And one of the things we are keen to do is get outside of those silos and get into a situation where we are able to issue securities, securitize and issue on alternative assets and make those mainstream in the private space. And we're not the only ones pushing on this space. You can very much see it. But it's a market trend. And I wanted to share that with yourselves and make sure it resonates. Is there any questions around this as an obvious market trend? No? Okay, then I'll push on to digital asset shared ledger. So from our perspective, digital asset ledger builds on the top of Cordite. First and foremost, it's a two-year technology accelerator that companies are buying. I'll go on to some of the clients we've picked up. They are taking Dazzle as a white label technology that they can use. Obviously, it builds on the top of Corda, and on top of Corda, it provides tokens, assets, a surface, an API that you can use out of the box, and it gives firms coming to the market to build, could be a token platform, could be a settlement rail, could be a central bank digital currency, provides them a ready-made Corda solution that they can then use out of the box. They can either host that themselves or we can run it for them. And a lot of companies just keep coming to us to buy Dazzle for their own purposes. But when you buy Dazzle, you're also being onboarded to the public Corda network. And in doing so, you've then got a technology and you are becoming part of a digital asset liquidity network that allows financial institutions and corporations. We only really see legal entities. We don't see natural legal entities. Legal entities coming onto the public Corda network, they are running that node and they are able to operate across that node with accounts, with tokens, very much the same style of functionality you see with wallets and tokens over on the Ethereum's and public blockchain side. You're now getting to see that on a finance grade platform such as Corda. Our target market has always been financial institutions, where we're very much focused on buy side and sell side firms. Obviously, on the sell side firms, Dazzle is being used to offer assurance. They're doing asset right digitization. They want to build books, do a primary issuance, and get control over the asset registry. They're obviously working with partners such as custodians who ultimately hold on to those tokens and provide the custodian solution. There's certain disruptions going on in the market there. And then on the other side, the buy side, who are then taking, mostly brokers in this case, are taking Dazzle to use it to hold those tokens on behalf of their clients and allow clients' portfolios to own and have alternative assets that have been issued out onto the Dazzle network. And last but not least, not there yet, but we are expecting the secondary venues, the liquidity venues, to come onto this network. We're already starting to see projects in the case of things like Archax, SDX, heading towards the Corda network, and we're working closely with them. Whether they join the business network operation of Dazzle yet remains to be seen. But from our perspective, we're positioning ourselves very much at the heart of that public Corda network as the leading digital asset liquidity network for financial institutions. There's got to be questions on this one.
Richard, this is Manny again. Is your Dazzle based upon the Corda token API? I know the early days of Corda, it was having its own infrastructure for tokens.
So we've got, obviously, Corda predates Token SDK. We worked very closely with the R3 company to make the Token SDK. And what we do with Dazzle is make Dazzle Token SDK compliant. The one reason for working with the R3 company was to make sure that we had a an interoperable solution for tokens in the Corda network. And that's what Token SDK is. And absolutely underneath the covers, Token SDK is inside Dazzle. You've got to remember, though, that on the Cordite side, Cordite was specifically targeted at crypto assets. And the Cordite token capability actually allows you to do to wrap things like Ethereum or ETH, sorry, not Ethereum, ETH, which has a higher level of precision. Token SDK doesn't have that. But from our perspective in Dazzle, we're agnostic to which ones you use. But absolutely, we pushed hard for that Token SDK standard, and therefore we're using that inside Dazzle. Good question. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Matthew of Securitize. Thank you for this discussion. A question on Dazzle. Is it, can you think of it as a Kaleido for Corda? Are you essentially bringing... So is it Corda as a service to a prospective institution that wants to participate in a network? Or is it the network?
Sorry, do you want to just walk through that question again? I just want to make sure I got the question correct.
I'm just trying to understand. So I think of these marketplaces with, you know, the digital assets and data as a product, a final product of different institutions deciding to participate in a network and providing you know, assets and data. And so is Dazzle the network operator for such a marketplace, or is it the blockchain as a service tool to enable a participant to join the network, the marketplace?
Yep. No, great question. So just a bit of delineation. Obviously, we're operating on top of the public Corda network. And so the actual network infrastructure, the low-level network infrastructure, is the public Corda network. On top of that, of course, you've got a protocol, Corda, and that's operating as a base level. Use a horrid turn of operating system, if you will, but Corda. And Dazzle then is operating as a network, a business network on top of that, that participants can join as legal entities. They join the public Corda network, and then they run the Corda app called Dazzle, and that then gives them the ability to operate tokens on the Corda network. We do not see ourselves as the network. We are building a liquidity network. We'd like to think of ourselves as the leading one. What we do have, and this is the confusion, and I absolutely love the question. What we are doing, obviously, is white labeling Dazzle and selling that to others. You'll have seen in the press that IVNO have broken cover on their partnership with us. They're using Dazzle underneath the covers. And companies are very, we're very comfortable with clients taking Dazzle as a technology base and using it to build their own private network if they wish to, away from the public Corda network, away from the Dazzle network, and using the Dazzle technology to build it. And the reason for that is because we know that over time this would drive interoperability, because at some point they will want to come back and want to interconnect. And from our perspective, from a Lab 577 perspective, we're simply I could only use the term hedging our bets on the basis that we are building a digital asset liquidity network, which something like Tokenize can join, and use it to issue tokens onto the public Corda network that you would do on the Ethereum network when you deploy a contract. And you can come onto that network as a single entity, or you can come to me and actually ask to white label Dazzle, and you can build that into the bottom of Tokenize and go and build your own proprietary platform, your own network, your own private network. And that very much depends on what jurisdiction you're operating in, what clients you're trying to operate with, and what type of business you're trying to build. Said, no size fits all, or one size does not fit all. And therefore, we've come to market on both sides, once as a white label technology, a technology accelerator, and secondly, as a network which you can join. And you can operate Dazzle as a node. Your legal entity can operate Dazzle as a node and join that network. Does that make sense? Did I answer that?
Yeah. Thank you.
A quick question, follow-up question, Richard. You know, when in Ethereum, you always have in general blockchain, you have a world stake. At any point of time, if I'm an issuer, I would know exactly who holds a token and how much. Corda being a private, became privacy-oriented network. How do you bring that world state to the issuer?
So the interesting thing on Dazzle is, as you absolutely right point out, Corda nodes are peer-to-peer. They don't have a global addressable space to work to. In actual fact, the reason for that architectural decision was so that you could have privacy between the transactions. Dazzle has underneath the covers, one of the pieces of functionality that we built into Dazzle is an asset register. So the issuer of a token is able to track where the token is. So each token as it moves, as it is transferred from one node to the next, one account to the next, across the network does actually call home. It's an ET call home style functionality, as we call it. And so the asset register in real time is updated as the token transfers. So unlike the Bitcoins and Ethereums, where you are simply updating the pointer to who owns, i.e. the private key, the public key denotes who owns, who is part of this asset register. As a token is transferred from one node to another across the network, in the Corda network, public Corda network. So the issuer who is holding the asset register has a real-time updated view of the data. But only the two parties, the buyer and the seller, and the asset register, the issuer of the token, have that knowledge. No one else in the network does.
So which means that if I transfer to money and money wants to transfer to, let's say, Elizabeth, that means that money's transfer to Elizabeth is now backed by this asset register because she really does not know whether I transferred to money and money is the actual owner of those tokens. The only way to know that is to go back to the phone home to the asset register and then look at the account. And then, of course, she has to have her own account and then money will transfer money or assets to her.
That's correct. And so the reason for doing that was because most jurisdictions, there is a requirement for an asset registry, and you need to know where those tokens are at any one point in time. And therefore, the issuer of those tokens, let's be a bond as a good example. When a bond is issued, the asset register or the issuer of that needs to retain that asset registry at all times. And that's exactly why that functionality was built. There's another good reason for doing it, and that's because when we come to pay the coupon or dividend, depending on the instrument type, we actually need to be able to deliver the payment of the coupon. And we do that exactly the same way as we would do where the coupon is actually a cash token. It has a settlement instruction inside it. And when you receive a cash token, actually, what you're receiving is a promissory note from a paying agent or a bank who has issued those cash tokens. Having received that coupon, if you apply an IBAN into it, the payment can then be settled usually off Ledger. We don't usually tend to settle it on Ledger. What we do is it fires a payment instruction out from the back of that issuer of that cash token, and the settlement is made. So what I just did there was walk through the asset registry, which obviously follows the secondary trading and keeps track of where the tokens are owned and the jurisdictional requirement for that. And then actually, one of the reasons for keeping an asset registry is so that you know who to pay coupons to. And with the coupons, what we talked through there was the basic cash token, which is effectively a promissory note, which allows institutions to send cash tokens around the network and at any point in time settle them back to the bank that issued them or the paying agent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, this is the problem of the cap table and being able to look at the beneficial owners at any point in time. And then, of course, taking action based on that, you know, for various purposes, for paying dividends, for paying coupons, for paying back the bond, you know, as the bond matures, all that stuff. But this means that the issuer is a silent or maybe not even a silent partner in every bilateral transaction. Is that right?
So that is correct. And actually, in fact, if you brought onto the ledger an asset that was off ledger, let's say you're trying to, you would use something like a custodian. And what we're doing here is not changing many of the models, business models that are out there. If you wish to represent a share on the network, you're either doing that as an issuing firm, and actually the asset register would be held by a custodian. And in many cases, jurisdictionally, you're required that the custodian with a custodian license owns that the issuance of those shares into the issuers of those financial instruments and looks after that asset registry. So there's a number of actors in this space, and depending on who's issuing the tokens depends on what the token represents. So custodians can walk into this space very easily and start representing tokenizing assets that they hold and they're custodying onto the network, and at any point in time holding an asset registry. So that would be, in my book, a depository receipt, so a GDR or an ADR.
So is that asset registry now become centralized?
So at that point, you're right in terms of the asset registry is owned and centralized in that issuing entity. So either the issuing entity that issued the piece or the custodian that's then issuing onto the network is running that asset registry. And absolutely, from our perspective, we weren't changing. We're not trying to change it into a decentralized asset registry. What we're trying to do is use the decentralized ledger to keep track of the secondary trading and the secondary ownership of those, and therefore making it much easier to track the asset registry.
So will the issuer also have other responsibilities? For example, if the transfer is to somebody who's not KYC'd or AML'd or has some other limits on ownership, like, you know, for example, sometimes the cap tables have limits on ownership of certain assets by a single entity. So those kind of actions, are they part of the smart contracts themselves, or are they actually done by active intervention by the issuers, by the people who are in charge of the asset registry?
So in terms of the, I will answer the former, the fact that you have a JVM in there and that the asset types are highly configurable, and more importantly, you can add add the Dazzle code base into your own Cord app means that you can then build any more complex product types or asset types as you wish to. So we would obviously recommend that if that's the case, that you wish to constrain the asset type in whichever way you want, that's exactly where the smart contract capability comes into play. You're creating an asset type that has some limitations, and the asset should itself enforce those constraints so that parties can't own a certain percentage or whatever the constraint is. Now, how you do that in practice is very much how you code that into the Cord app.
Well, does that mean, for example, in the example that I cited above, that money is transferring to Elizabeth, and I have, I'm transferring something to money, he's transferring to Elizabeth. Now, Elizabeth also has assets coming in from other sources, so her cap table would only be visible if you can have access to the total asset registry. Anyway, I don't want to go into the details of this because it's already 11 o'clock and we have spent a very interesting hour talking about all this stuff. And I think, we'll engage offline through the Capital Markets SIG. And I thank you, Richard, for showing up.
Not at all. So as I said, Vivian, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for the participants to come along. As I say, for some of you, this will be old. You've heard my voice before on a number of occasions. For others, this is the first time you've heard from me. I have just walked through at rapid pace a huge level of material that we wouldn't normally ram into this hour. It's just knowing the special interest group and the members of the special interest group, I'm well aware that you're pretty much up to speed on at the top of the curve, and therefore I could rattle through it at speed. We covered off Cordite and the release of XDC. I would absolutely love to start a conversation with any of you around how XDC could help your firms, how Cordite could help your firms, and obviously from the point of view of Dazzle. Great to, I know that Manny Miles is already talking to you, but Elizabeth, over on the tokenized side, if you're interested, very happy to have a conversation with you about how Dazzle can help you. From the quarter side, we are we're very open, and Dazzle is there to serve. So very open to conversations.
Definitely we'll follow up.
Thank you, Manny. No other questions, it sounds, Vivian.
Yes, I'm on. We are going to terminate this meeting, and we'll talk later. And you'll have the recording of this available, and we can expand on this stuff.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
What's the best way to reach you? Is there an email or?
Yeah, Richard, rc at lab577.io.
There we go.
Anyway, I can put you in touch with him.
Elizabeth. Thanks.
What I'll do is I'll share the pack with the rest of the group, and we'll look forward to chatting to you on the other side.
Sounds great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
2 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.